2 Kings chapter 4, we want to look at the miracle contained in verses 38 through to 41 of 2 Kings 4. We'll read those verses again together. Verses 38 through 41, we read, "And Elisha came again to Gilgal, and there was a dearth," which just simply means a famine in the land, "and the sons of the prophets were sitting before him. He said unto his servants, Set on the great pot, and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets. And one went out into the field to gather herbs, and found a wild vine, and gathered thereof wild gourds, his lap full, and came and shred them into the pot of pottage, for they knew them not. So they poured out for the men to eat. It came to pass, as they were eating of the pottage, that they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot. And they could not eat thereof. But he said, Then bring meal. And he cast it into the pot. And he said, Pour out for the people, that they may eat. And there was no harm in the pot." In the year 2015, Cross Point Free Will Baptist Church in Ohio had a church picnic that they wish they never had. They had a potluck lunch. Basically, they're very popular in America. What it is basically is everybody cooks a dish and they then bring the dish, and well, it's potluck, whatever you get and you receive. However, after that picnic, one person sadly passed away, and at least 20 others were sick with symptoms of a disease named foodborne botulism. Now, immediately you ask, well, what is that? Well, foodborne botulism is a rare but fatal illness caused by a nerve toxin that is produced by certain bacteria in food. The symptoms include drooping eyelids, slurred speech, and can even progress to paralysis of the limbs and respiratory muscles. One of the news headlines following that story simply read this: "There was poison in the stew." And you know, that could be very simply the news line of 2 Kings 4 and the verse number 40. Here we read of a similar set of circumstances. Here we read of a simple pot of stew, but it was said of this pot of stew that there was death in the pot. Elisha, at this juncture in his ministry, prior to this miracle, he had already performed 7 miracles. They were all differing in their nature. We saw him raise a dead child to life. We saw him give a child to a family. We have even seen him cleanse the cursed waters of Jericho. In the last few weeks, we have seen that Elisha, he would have often passed by the little farming village of Shunem. But now he takes us back to a place where Elisha had been previously with Elijah. Here in these verses, we read in the verse 38 that Elisha came again to Gilgal. You'll remember before in 2 Kings chapter 2 that Elisha, he went on a journey with Elijah before Elijah was then taken up into heaven there at the river Jordan. Well, one of the cities that they passed through was this city, the city of Gilgal. Why was Elisha there? Well, it is a completely different set of circumstances. Elisha, it seems now, has taken on some form of role in a teaching capacity. Now sees Elisha don the professor's chair. We find him here in Gilgal. And what is he doing? Well, verse 38 tells us that there were sons of the prophet sitting before Elisha. Elisha, he was simply instructing young sons of the prophets, which simply means young prophets in the training, prophets in the making. He was instructing them as to their duties in the prophetic office. Here he was. He was passing on the baton, as it were. He was instructing the rising generation of prophets to come. Now, all was not well at this time. Verse 38 tells us that there was a dearth in the land. That means that there was a famine. But we see God, as he always does and as he has promised to do, what is he doing with these young, hungry students? Well, as the psalmist teaches us, he's furnishing a table in the wilderness. He's setting before them and spreading before them a meal to keep them going. It seems it was just a normal day. Elisha turns to his servant, who was, we're not told here, but I suggest to you is Gehazi, his servant who's been with him all the way through his ministry. He turns to his servant, and it's a very, very ordinary, everyday occurrence. He tells him simply this, set on the pot and seethe pottage. What he's simply saying is this, get the pot and put some soup or some stew and bring it to the boil. And we're going to serve a meal for these hungry students. But unfortunately, there was one renegade student amongst them all. He decided, well, I don't like this bland meal that Elisha is going to set before me. And so he took it upon himself to go out and to try and find something that would spice up this stew. Let's put it like that. He wanted something to add to it, perhaps to make it more flavoursome, perhaps to make it more palatable. However, when he went out, he found a wild and a dangerous gourd from a wild vine. He then brought it back to this stew, harmless enough, and he added it to this stew. You see, Gehazi then, he brings the stew to the boil and he serves it to these hungry students. But as they begin to tuck into this meal, one of the students, he rises up and he says, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot. This, I want to suggest to you this morning, was the most deadliest meal that has ever been served in this world. Because if they were to continue to eat this meal, this pot of stew, it would have killed them. That's why this young man exclaims, there is death in the pot. So it was by this one man adding this gourd to the stew that it was poisoned, that the results were death. However, we have seen Elisha. And Elisha, what is he? Well, he's a man of many miracles. And he again seizes the opportunity to prove the Lord, to show that he is the one anointed of God, to show that he is the one set apart as the prophet of the Lord to the nation at this time. And what does he do? He takes a very, very simple, everyday piece of food, takes some meal, and he applies it to this stew. And then he performs a miracle on this stew. And with the result that in verse 41, we read at the end of the verse, there was no harm in the pot. He removed the effect of danger from this pot. And like this pot, sin, whilst it is deadly, it can also be dealt with. It can be miraculously eradicated from your life. Oh, see this morning that in this pot, it is a very simple picture of the deadliness, of the corruption, of the contamination, and of the eventual condemnation that sin brings forth. However, Jesus Christ, through the application of means, and Elisha takes meal here, but don't miss that it's Christ that we're looking at. He is the one who prefigures Jesus Christ, and it is Christ, through the application of his blood, that remove the effects of death from your soul. Oh, this morning, don't miss Christ. That's what we've been emphasizing to you in these studies. And we emphasize it again to you this morning. Don't miss the work of Christ through the ministry of Elisha, the miracle working prophet. Here he is again. Here he set before you this morning. In our Bible reading on Wednesday night in the prayer meeting, we looked at Ephesians chapter 2. Now, we didn't look at this verse, but in Ephesians chapter 2, towards the end of that chapter, we read that Christ came and preached unto the church at Ephesus. Now, I want you to think about that, because we know fine and well that it was Paul who went to Ephesus and other missionaries. He was the human instrument. He was the preacher. Yet we read there at the end of Ephesians chapter 2 that it was Christ that came and preached. Now what does that show you and I this morning? It shows you this, that whenever we are under the divine instruction of the Word of God, whilst there is the man and there is the mouthpiece of the man, what is happening Sunday by Sunday and week by week, Jesus Christ himself, he comes and he preaches to you and to me. What a solemn thing this morning. What a solemn thing that Christ himself is standing, that Christ himself is preaching to you. And as we're seeing this morning, he's preaching to you a message of cleansing, a message of forgiveness, a message even of remission. Oh, this morning, take hold of Jesus Christ. Take hold of the one who is the meal for the soul, who is the cleansing, who is and offers pardon freely. Afresh, take of his cleansing blood and apply it to your heart and life. So this morning I want to simply consider the clause or the phrase in the verse number 40, death in the pot. Death in the pot. I have three simple thoughts that I want to leave with you this morning about death in the pot. Think with me firstly about the addition to this pot. The addition to this pot. Verses 38 and 39 we read, Elisha came again to Gilgal, and there was a dearth in the land. And the sons of the prophets were sitting before him, and he said unto his servants, set on the great pot, and seize pottage for the sons of the prophets. And one went out to the field to gather herbs, found a wild vine, and gathered thereof wild gourds his lapful, and came, and shred them into the pot of pottage. Elisha is now here in Gilgal. He is in the city of Gilgal. We saw him last week and previous weeks in the little farming community of Shunem. But now Elisha, he's in Gilgal, and he's instructing the men to come. It was mealtime. And so Elisha said to his servant Gehazi, to set a great pot and seethe pottage. Now, he was basically saying, as I've already said, he was saying, look, make a pot of stew and seethe it, bring it to the boil, get it ready. We can then serve these hungry students. And this was something that would have been done regularly and ordinarily. I want you just to understand this. This seems a very elementary point, but I want you to really understand this. This was not the first time that Gehazi made a pot of stew for these young men. Just read the verse again. Read the language, how it reads. It seems so familiar. We read there, verse 38, he said unto his servant, set on the great pot and save pottage for the sons of the prophets. He's referring to the great pot. A large pot. A big pot. And it seems that Gehazi is obviously familiar. So this is something that would happen on a regular basis. Remember also I've said there was a dearth in the land. There was famine. And what better meal to provide in times of famine than a nice, hearty, warm bowl of stew or bowl of soup. There would have been vegetables there. Maybe they're throwing things together. They're throwing it all in this large pot. It was the perfect meal to get by in difficult and famine times. Now, one has to assume that, as I said, this pot was made many, many times. So we have to assume this, that if this young man didn't take it upon himself to go and to find a wild gourd and to add it to this pot of stew and try and add to it flavour and spice it up a little bit, we have to assume this, that there would be no death in the pot. That this pot would have been fine. That this pot would have been able to have been consumed by these students. I think that is a fair assumption. Now that's important. Because in verse 39 we then read, as we said in this point, there was an addition to this pot. We read that one of the sons of the prophets, he goes out into the wild. And what does he do? He finds a wild vine. And on that wild vine, we read that there is a wild gourd. Now the word wild, it simply means uncultivated. So I want to suggest to you that perhaps there was trees and forestry in behind where they were staying. Maybe they had their own little plot of ground and they grew their own vegetables. But in behind, well, there were wild vegetables and things growing wild, wild berries and so on. And on this wild vine, there was a wild gourd. Now the word gourd here, it really has the idea of something today that resembles a cucumber. No, a cucumber, a long green vegetable. So here he is, and he goes out and he finds this wild vine, and on this vine there is this cucumber. He thinks to himself, well, this is sure to spice up the stew. So he adds this wild gourd, this wild vegetable to the stew. And because of the addition to the stew, the pot became poisoned, and it had then the potential to kill each of these students. Verse 40, he cries out, one of them, there is death in the pot. So, it was through the actions of this one man, the tainting of this Jew, which was fine had it been left alone, that the entire pottage was spoiled, and it possessed the potential to destroy and kill each of these young men. And this, the actions of this one young man, does it not typify the actions of another man? Because sin, while it affects all men, yet it started with one man. It started with the actions of Adam. Here we see it very, very clearly. I want you to see it. This young man, I believe, was well-intentioned. He was well-intentioned. And was Adam in the garden not well-intentioned? Here we see a picture of Adam in this world. Because before Adam fell and sinned, he lived in a world that was perfect. He lived in a world where the ground was not cursed. He lived in a world where work was not laborious to him. It was an absolute pleasure to him. And he lived in constant fellowship and communion with God. Yet by his one action, the whole world, it was poisoned by a deadly and a dreadful disease, the poison of sin. And because of that, every man, including you and including me, and every woman and boy and girl, they are now under the sentence of death. We are now subject to the effects of sin through the action of one man. The Bible reminds us in Romans 5 verse 12, whereas by one man, sin entered into the world, and death by sin. So there it's speaking of sin and death by Adam generally. But I want you to see this then. So death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. So it speaks of his one action first. By one man, sin entered the world. But what was the result and cause? Well, it was this. Death passed upon all men, for all have sinned. Again, Romans 5, just a few verses down from chapter, verse 12, we read verse 18. As by the offence of one, judgment came upon all men to condemnation. As by one, the offence of one, that's Adam. By the offence of one, judgment came. And condemnation and wrath and death came upon you and upon me. 1 Corinthians 15 verse 22. For as in Adam, all die. In Adam, we are all subject to death. You see, we don't become sinners by doing evil. Rather, we do evil because we are sinners. We are poisoned by the sickness of sin, and it can all be traced back to the actions of one man. You say to me this morning, and it is levelled often when you talk to people about spiritual matters, is that fair? Surely by the actions of one man, and I am still suffering because of the actions of one man, how on earth can that be fair? Well, theologically, I want you to understand this now. Theologically, Adam is known as our federal head. Our federal head. Now, what does that mean? Well, let me explain it to you this way. In America, what do they call the law? They call the law the feds. Hear it in the shows and so on. They talk about the feds. Now, what is a policeman? What does he do? He is the representative of the law of our country. The representative of the law. He's not the law himself. But he is the representative of the law. Now what is Adam to this whole world? He is our federal head. He is our representative head. So that whenever he sinned, there in the garden, we sinned as well. Whenever he transgressed the law of God, so then we did as well. And now, because of the actions of one man, we are subject to death. You this morning are subject to physical death. Whenever Adam, immediately after Adam sinned in the garden, the effects of physical death, they came upon him. Oh, it didn't come upon him immediately. He didn't die immediately. But eventually we read in the book of Genesis that Adam, he passes away. he dies. And you will one day pass away as well. You are subject to physical death because of the deadly poison of sin in your life. We also experience spiritual death. What is spiritual death? Spiritual death is simply being separated and cut off from the presence of God and from communion with him. Oh, before Adam sinned, we could say this, that the world, it was a beautiful pot of pottage, as it were. Oh, he enjoyed constant communion and fellowship with God. But whenever he transgressed and he disobeyed the law of God that was given to him, don't eat of the fruit, because if you do, you're going to die. Whenever he did that, he became spiritually dead. That means that he didn't enjoy communion with God. What happened in Genesis chapter 3? He asks the question, God, he enters into the garden through Jesus Christ, because Adam says that he heard a voice in the garden. It was Christ. Christ was there in the garden, and the question, the very searching and probing question is asked, Adam, where art thou? Where art thou, Adam? What's Adam doing? He's running from the presence of God. He's running from communion with God and fellowship with God. Why? Because he's spiritually dead now. Spiritually dead. And eventually, he would have been subject, had he not have been converted, had the animal not been slain and the blood not been taken, and he then not been clothed by the skins of that animal, all picturing Jesus Christ, the one who would crush the head of Satan. Had he not been clothed, he would have experienced eternal death as well. Body and soul, falling in the darkness of blackness forever. And I said to you this morning that you are subject because of the deadly poison of sin, and by the act of one man, you're now subject to each of those three types of death. Physical death, one day you're going to pass away. Spiritual death, you're separated from God. And eternal death. Oh, as in Adam, all die. On the 11th of May, in the year 2000, the lady found an email on her computer. Went into your email, and the title read this. You know, before you can click into your email, the title was this: I love you. She didn't know who the person it was that sent it. And so naturally, this lady, she was single, and so, well, she double-clicked as fast as she could. And she wanted to see who sent this email saying, I love you. As soon as she opened the email, there was a large screen that came up on her computer, and the message said this: you have just been infected by the love bug. The love bug was a deadly computer virus in the year 2000. And as soon as it came to her computer, it spread throughout the world. There were economies that were greatly impacted by it. There was even important governmental decisions that were impacted because computer systems, they were all brought to a halt. And yet way back in time, there was a far more deadlier virus that swept across this world. And it was sin. It was sin. And it brings death. And oh, this morning, that we might see the exceeding, as Paul said, the exceeding seriousness and sinfulness of sin. Oh, it was by the addition to this pot that there was death in the pot. The addition to the pot, I want you to see secondly here, the oblivion towards this pot. The oblivion towards this pot. Verse 39, we read, one went out into the field to gather herbs and found a wild vine and gathered thereof wild gourds his lap full and came and shred them into the pot of pottage, for they knew them not. I want you to see that there was nothing really suspect about this large wild gourd. It came from a wild vine, an uncultivated vine, but it was a vine nonetheless. So this one unsuspecting student, he would have been used to seeing vines and taking normal vegetables from those vines. And so he sees a wild and uncultivated vine, and he sees a vegetable hanging from it, a gourd. And so he thinks to himself, well, it's harmless enough. And then what does he do? Well, it's a very, very familiar picture. It says that he returns his lap full. You know, in a bygone age, when ladies would have taken, and they're maybe gathering in something, and they would have taken something from their lap, and they would have gathered their lap full with something. Well, that's the thought here. This man, he took his cloak and he rushed home, or rushed back to the college, his lap full. He had loads of curds, and he then added them to this pot of stew. Now, I want you to see something. Did he just throw them in whole? If you're making stew or soup, do you do that? No, you do not. No, you prepare the vegetables, you cut them up, and you ensure that they can be cooked. And it was exactly the same here in Bible times. Because we read that they were shredded into this stew. Verse 39, one went out into the field to gather herbs, found a wild vine, and gathered thereof wild gourds his lap full, and came and shred them into the pot of pottage. So they were shred. They were chopped up. They were maybe even shredded. You know the way you would bring them into a fine piece so that you maybe couldn't have even noticed them in the stew. So they were shredded. They were placed into this pottage. With the result that in verse 39, these hungry students, we read, they knew them not. So here was a deadly, deadly vegetable, a poisonous vegetable placed into this pot of pottage. And these students hadn't a clue. They knew them not. That this wild gourd, it was hidden. And they were absolutely oblivious to the impending and ominous danger that they were in. The danger of death in the pot. And while sin's consequences are ominous, yet men are often oblivious. You are often aware of sin's deadly consequences. Oh, is this not what happens with sin? Maybe tonight or this morning outside of Christ, maybe this is you. You're oblivious to the fact that you're under the condemnation of God. You're oblivious that one sin before a holy God is enough to banish you to the lowest chasms of the damned and bar you from paradise forever. Oh, this morning, have you exercised wisdom? Have you seen your sin? Have you understood your sin? Its effects, its guilt, its consequences. Eventually, you will perish. And not only physically, but spiritually, you will be cut off from God if the effects of sin have never been eradicated from your life. Oh, this morning, I wonder, are you rushing headlong and you don't even understand the deadly consequences of sin? You know, sin is deceitful. It is a deadly poison. Hebrews 3:13, we read that we are to exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Now, this is speaking of believers, but it could equally be applied to the unbeliever. We are told that sin is deceitful, and so the Church of Christ, what are we to do? Well, daily, we're to exhort one another. As Hebrews tells us, we're to provoke one another to good works. We are to ensure that we are looking out for each other. Why? Lest any of us be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. You think of Samson, there in the book of Judges, lying in the lap of Delilah, so oblivious to the deadly consequences that he was about to face. Sitting there, and he hadn't a clue what was about to happen. Again, Proverbs 22 verse 3. Contrasting the wise and foolish man. We read, a prudent man foreseeth evil and hideth himself. But the simple pass on and are punished. Now, the word simple there, it doesn't have the idea of simple in a degrading sense. Say someone's simple. It doesn't mean that at all. It's contrasting prudence or wisdom with those who are not wise. Those who are not thinking. And what does it say? The wise man, he sees danger. And what does he do? He hides himself from that danger. But the simple pass on. They just fly headlong, straight, head first, into danger. My wonder, is that you this morning? Oh, the wise, there are those, and you are saved in this morning, and you're wise, you have been prudent, you have seen the danger, and you've hidden yourself in the cleft of the rock that is Jesus Christ. You have sought shelter and refuge for your soul. But yet there are those in this meeting this morning, And we could say that in Proverbs 22 verse 3, you're simple. And you just pass on. And you just see sin and it's there, it's very poignant, and yet you just pass on anyway. And you fall to your death. There's a man named C.J. Mahaney in America, prominent preacher. Cannot say I agree with everything that he believes, but he is a reformed preacher. But one day he was out for breakfast with his family in a cafe, and they were eating. And then there was a well-dressed man came through the door, and he sat in the booth in front of them. As they were eating, Mahaney, he noticed that this man, he was obviously a very well-to-do man. He had a brand new Armani suit. He was obviously in a new shirt and tie. He was prim and proper. He even remarked that his moustache was groomed. So this man was obviously going somewhere extremely important. He ordered a cup of coffee and a bagel with cream cheese, and he was reading the newspaper. However, this man, after a minute or two, he set his coffee down. He got up in a rush. And as he was getting up in a rush, Mahaney noticed something. He noticed there was a big blob of cream cheese in his moustache. He tried to tell him about it, but this man, he just rushed out of the shop. And yet, sin not like that. Oh, sin, it clings to us. And it is even prominent in a public way at times. And yet we rush on, knowing not the grave error that we make. Verse 40, something happens. These young men, they come to their senses. We read, so they poured out for the men to eat. It came to pass, as they were eating of the pottage, that they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot, and they could not eat thereof. This pottage was poured out, it was served. And they began to eat. But as soon as they begin to eat, they notice that there's something bad about this. They notice that there is something poisonous in this stew. They feel its effects. They feel its potential. And they knew there's something in this pot that tells them that if we continue to eat this, then there is death in the pot. We are in grave danger. So what do? I want you to see what they did. They cry out to the man of God and they tell him exactly what is wrong. O thou man of God, Elisha, there is death in the pot. And they bring before him this deadly poison and this deadly vegetable. And before the Lord this morning, very simply, that's what you need to do. You cannot continue on oblivious to your sin, its consequences and its condemnation on your life. As you taste the effects of sin, you need to cry out this morning, O thou man of God, there's death in the pot, there's death, spiritual death coming to my life because of the deadly effects of sin. Come to the man of God, come to Christ. And bring before him your desperate and your deep need. And he will meet that need. Because, as we have looked at this morning in this miracle, the addition to this pot and the oblivion towards this pot, I want you to see lastly then, the intervention for this pot. Verse 41. We read there, and the Elisha now is the speaker, we read, but he said, then bring meal. And he cast it into the pot. And he said, pour out for the people, that they may eat. There was no harm in the pot. So they come to Elisha. O thou man of God, there's death in the pot. And what does Elisha do? Takes something very ordinary, meal. And he applies it to this pot of stew. Do you remember what he did to the cursed waters in Jericho? He just took salt, a cruse of salt, and he applied it to the cursed waters. Well, here he's doing again something. He's devising means. He's taking means and he's applying it to that which brings forth death. And he applies the meal. And then, after applying the meal, he works a miracle through this meal, and the deathly impacts of this pot of stew, they are completely removed. The bitterness of this dish, it was completely eradicated. And like the meal, so it is with the Messiah, Jesus Christ. He removes the pollution of sin and its effects. Because here again, we're taken to the cleansing ministry of Jesus Christ. So through His substitutionary death and His blood that was shed freely for you. What does He do? He removes the stain of sin. He removes its poison. He removes its uncleanness. And He also removes the curse of sin. He removes the effects of physical and spiritual and eternal death upon your soul. You say to me this morning, how does Christ remove physical death? We all die, don't we? And that's true. Well, you think about it. Whenever Christ returns to this earth, and there is a resurrection of the just and the unjust, as Daniel 12 verse 2 clearly states, when there is that resurrection, your body, it will rise from the graves, the graves will be opened, and your body, if it's resting in Christ, it will be raised again. You will be free from the effects of death. That's why Christ is called, in the book of Revelation, the destroyer of death and the destroyer of the works of the devil. Oh, this morning, what you need is Jesus Christ. What you need is His cleansing, which is offered to you through the meal of His body. Hebrews 10 verse 10. By the which will we are sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. And it's through the offering of His body and through the blood that flows from His body that you're cleansed, that you're sanctified, that you are forgiven. And it is through the wounds of Christ that you then receive His washing. His blood is the meal for the soul. There was a wonderful conclusion to all this. There was no harm in the pot. No harm in the pot. Verse 40 says there was death in the pot. But verse 41 tells us there was no harm in the pot through the intervention of the miracle working Elisha. Death in the pot. May God bless His word to your life and soul this morning.